All right. Somehow we got more on time today, so I don't have like only 20 minutes for the afterburn, which is good. So let's see if we can get some questions in. If you have comments or questions, this is our afterburn. Go ahead and line up over here. If you're on live stream, start typing in your comments and questions, and we can go ahead and get started here, it looks like, with Brandy.
I need you to organize something for me. You, in Exodus 19:5.
Okay, you got to put that.
Sorry. I know. Y'all tell me that every week. He said, the Father said, you're to be my people. Do what I say, do.
Yep.
Paraphrasing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then he said, okay, now I'm going to tell you what to do. And like James is saying, be doers and not hearers. So for the people, let's say, for example, I'm at a church and someone here, I meet them and I work with you, right? And they come and say, hey, you know, you're supposed to be keeping the Shabbat. Am I responsible for hearing that? Even though, like you said, it hasn't been revealed to me?
No. The hearers, this is all in the context of, and remember, James is saying, I'm talking to those in dispersion that should know. So he's talking to bubble-popped people, so to speak.
Okay.
He said, look, if you're bubble-popped, don't be a hypocrite, don't be double-minded. You heard, now do. Now, if you hear and don't understand, remember, it also talks about receiving. Revelation, I know I've mentioned this a lot lately. Revelation is revealed information that stays simply information unless you accept it, receive it, and then do something with it, right? So if I'm talking to someone who's in the world or in Christianity about any of the Torah observant stuff, like you said, with the Shabbat, with Sabbath, they heard me say it, but unless he reveals it, it's not necessarily something they are now responsible for. Okay, you're responsible for, it says that what is revealed belongs to man. But the revelation has to come from him, not from us. Okay?
Right, okay. So,
So even when I say something that brings some insight maybe you didn't have before, if he doesn't reveal, oh, that's right. If he doesn't reveal that to you, my revealing it wasn't the problem. Just because I said it, you're not all just now all responsible for it. He has to then reveal and you go, oh, that's what that is. Now you're responsible because you received it, okay?
Okay. So when you say it, okay, gosh. So you know how sometimes you're like, why aren't you wearing your tzitzit? Why, you know, like it hasn't been revealed to those people and maybe—
No, I
maybe
think some people, who are wearing their tzitzit, look, when you take something like some of the Torah observing things, somebody is new, they're still double-minded to some degree. Everybody who's new is still double-minded to some degree. So they're going to dabble a little bit. They might wear the tzitzit, they might not. They may, you know, keep Shabbat, but then at home they're not really keeping it, but they are. It takes a while to kind of get the double-mindedness stuff out. And so it's not for us to judge the speed with which somebody gets serious. We'll call it getting serious. And that seriousness comes from the battle between belief and doubt being won. Until the doubt has been dealt with, there's going to be this kind of, you know, I don't know if the word is more loose behavior. Loose meaning it's not going to be strictly adhered to. You're going to be doing it sometimes, maybe not so much all the time. And so there's more flexibility and all that because there's doubt. Okay?
But, okay, so then going back to when he said it, they're standing there like, well, hold on, let me see the terms of what this whole contract, this covenant thing is before we decide to do it. But like falling in line, it's like, I'll tell you, you agree, and then I'll tell you what to do after. So I guess I'm torn kind of like if you say it, and remember you explained it very good, and I'm sorry, I don't have word for word, but you explained it as a parent tells the kid, I think, to clean their room, and like, I don't want to clean my room, and then they finally clean the room, and they're proud of themselves that they cleaned the room because they just did it.
Right.
And then it came after.
Right.
Right? And it's so if you're here, not saying we're supposed to go and pound each other on the head for it, but if you're here and like you say it, then where's that part where it's like, okay, do it and then see what happens? Just like with counseling. Maybe it's revealed in there, but maybe it didn't. I guess
right.
I'm trying to get the understanding of it didn't strike them as like, I think what he told me in counseling is true. I should do it. I've done some things where I'm just like, okay, really? And it came out good.
I understand. Okay. Look, let's go to Sinai, and it'll work the same in what we're talking about here, okay? The thing in Sinai was the expectation that they knew who they were dealing with. And so they covenanted based on, I know who you are, so it doesn't matter what you've said yet, I trust because of who you are. When people come to counsel, if they don't see me, we'll call it the right way, the way that would be successful for the counsel, then they're not going to receive. So anybody that was at Sinai that really didn't see him right, even though out of fear and, you know, this guy, I mean, after all, he just destroyed Egypt. All right, so if they didn't see him right, they weren't going to go forward right. Okay, so they were only motivated out of physical fear, like they were just petrified, like, oh my gosh, this is a powerful being, as opposed to, oh, wow, this being just saved us and has a plan for us and is providing for us. I need to trust him, right? So if you come into counsel not trusting that his word may come out of my mouth to give you information you need, then you're not going to receive it because it's about how you see that person, okay? And I think that's really where the parallel is, you know, okay?
Okay. So the receiving part then is, I think, where I'm stuck for.
Right. The receiving still is based on how much, again, trust and doubt or belief and doubt about the source, okay? The ones who received at Sinai, ultimately in the men, it was really just Joshua and Caleb, who really understood who they were dealing with, okay? I mean, others were impressed with how powerful this being was, but they didn't understand the relationship, okay? And so people still, and this is not a negative at all, almost all of you have been in churches and dealt with pastors and done some counseling. And just like I said the other night, I said, is there a difference between an Ephesians 4:11 teacher and just anybody that's teaching? Well, is there a difference between getting counsel from someone that may be anointed and may be giving you counsel from above, or just anybody that's counseling? And can you believe that that person may be different in some way? Because if you can, you'll receive it differently. And if you can't, you'll receive it differently. Because if I'm just another person giving you, you know, information that may be useful, and you take it as, well, it may be useful, you may or may not give it a try. If you trust that it maybe came from above, you're going to trust it and then give it a shot because you believe it's the right thing. So it really comes down to how you see the source, okay?
So that revelation then is, it's just between you and the Father as far as you doing something, not necessarily because somebody said it.
Which is why we should not be judging at all. And I don't judge anybody when they come to counsel and don't do what we counsel them to do. I sometimes wonder why they keep coming back if they're not going to do what we tell them, because I mean, they're not ready, obviously, for the counsel or whatever. But I don't judge them like, in, you know, like, well, you're just an idiot or you're this or that. I'm like, look, you're not ready to receive counsel, so why do you keep coming to get it? Okay, because if you were ready to receive it, you'd have done at least some of the things we told you to do. And there's a good 50-50 of you guys who don't do what we have, you know, we suggest to you to do, and others to do and trust it. And thankfully, and I think Elder and Rabbi Tom can say the same thing, everybody that's actually trusted and done it got good results, okay? But whether they receive it or not has to do with how they look at myself or Elder when we give, or Rabbi Tom when we give them counsel. Are you looking at us like a human being just giving you counsel? Are you looking at us someone who's a vessel hopefully giving insight from above to you? And that's the difference. And by the way, I can't convince you. That's something that's got to be revealed to you, where the Father will tell you, listen, I'm speaking through that man. You need to listen to him. Okay? And that can't be something Elder can't convince you. I can't. Rabbi Tom, no, we can't convince you of that. All right? And we have to take things on a lot more faith than they did at Sinai, because at Sinai they heard his voice and it was scary and there was lightnings and stuff and he just destroyed Egypt. I mean, there was, you know, big signs and wonders beyond anything we can imagine. And so we're not having that here. But then, you know, you do get to hear people walk up here to the mic and say, I went and got counsel and it worked beautifully and this miracle happened and this thing worked out this way. And so there is evidence that it does work, okay? But that still has to be you and him. Because really, it's still not about you and me or Elder or Rabbi Tom. It's about you and him. We're just trying to be a conduit in the middle, okay? But you can get distracted by that because you don't like the way one of us says it or you don't like some other thing, right? And so then you're allowing that to distract you from the source of the information that's coming to you. So hopefully you can get past that. Did that answer your question mostly? All right, good question. It's a really good question because there are these interesting balances that are there. And I know that, and I get this on a regular basis, we do worry about people that, you know, we may interact with and we think, well, but I shared this with them. Are they now responsible? Not necessarily. Probably not most of the time, because they're not good ground ready to receive anything. It's just information that came in their ears and went right out the other ear, okay? And so, you know, most of you probably were, we'll call it, exposed to some truth way before you ever started actually embracing it. Somebody came and talked to you about Sabbath or about, you know, Christmas and Easter is pagan or some other thing, and you just weren't ready, you know, so you didn't receive it at that moment. It's not like later on you all of a sudden received it from the first time. It had to come in a new form, in a new way, when you were ready to receive it. Just because you were exposed to something doesn't now make you responsible. Because I've had people get really nervous. Oh, but I've told my brother and my sister and my mother and father all this stuff. And now they're not in big trouble. He wants to see what you do with what is revealed. Revealed, okay, meaning like he is revealing it to you. Not just because information came across your awareness. You saw it on the internet, you saw it on YouTube, you heard it from somebody. That doesn't mean revelation. Revelation comes from above. So when I'm teaching and you go, well, that hasn't been revealed yet to you, maybe. But if all of a sudden you go, and light bulbs are going on, that's not me, that's him. Does he understand that? Okay? Because not everybody in the room got the same light bulb moment, because not everybody was at that point in their walk where he was ready to say, that's it right there, pay attention. And everybody's walk has its own pace to it and its own ups and downs and whatever, okay? A couple of steps forward, a couple of steps back. Everybody's got their own unique little thing. So hopefully, it's a great question, thank you. All right, Amy.
I forget.
You forgot?
So I always, when you say the devil made me do it, I always think of Flip Wilson.
That's right. That's right.
So for me, it's always seemed like nobody's going to do anything for me. Nothing ever, you know, if I want something, I got to figure out how to get it because nobody's going to come to my rescue. So then, and then also if something sounds too good to be true, it probably is. So how am I ever going to survive this? Because it's exhausting every day. You got to go out there into the world and be nice to everybody and act like everything's good when inside it's not necessarily good. And I think it just like makes me swerve a little bit.
Sure.
Because I can not always want to be nice to people.
It's hard. He put us in a really hard place. I mean, you know, this world, which is why it's such a great proving ground, is a really hard place. Because it's nonstop temptation to not be what you're supposed to be. There's nonstop temptation to be to lose your peace, to lose your temper, to lose your nerve, to be sad and upset, to be depressed, to be this. All the negative emotional spaces. This is a wonderful fertile ground to nurture all of that. And so it really, in a sense, is a great proving ground to see if you can overcome all those things and endure through them. And it's very challenging. And I think all of us have those moments. Look, even Moses, to the point where he said to Yahweh, he said, would you just kill me? I cannot do this anymore. These people are driving me crazy. They're never satisfied. They whine and complain. I mean, it's just, it's hard. And then you're dealing with your own stuff, you know? And we don't know about Moses' stuff. I mean, we know he had some anger issues and things, but we don't know about what other stuff he might have been dealing with because he doesn't say. So you've got your stuff, and then you're dealing with everybody else's stuff, and it's just, oh my gosh, like a perfect storm, you know? And for all you people too young, Flip Wilson, 60s and 70s comedian, had a TV show, and he had this sort of church lady character that he would do, you know? Anyway, so that's just for those who can remember that far back. And it's one of the lines was, the devil made me do it. All right, so anyway, Brianna.
Okay.
I'm sure if you look him up on YouTube, you can find all of that, okay?
I was going to say something else, but then like I was sitting here and I like randomly thought of something, and it had to do with when you brought up the Sabbath at the beginning of the teaching. You'd mentioned that you read the book, and like the one thing that you remembered was you have to do it to understand it.
Yep.
And maybe this actually makes sense, but you can let me know. I was thinking about what was the first time the Sabbath was ever mentioned was in the beginning in Genesis, right? When he created the earth and then everything, and then the seventh day he rested. And I just realized that everything else he had commanded to be there, like, let light come, and then it came. But the seventh day, it just seems so different because you say it's a gift, it's a benefit to us. And he didn't say, let there be a day of rest. He didn't say that. He said, and I rested. And I just thought that's like kind of interesting because what I was thinking is a lot of commands sometimes you're not supposed to rationalize. You just do this because he said so. But when it comes to the Sabbath, if you don't have the right mind and the right heart coming into it, you won't receive a benefit. So it's like, it's not just about like, oh, do it, but you have to like fully be present of mind and heart. So I just thought that was interesting. I don't know.
No, that's great. That's great. And you know, you actually just kind of inspired the thought about the Sabbath. You know, I mentioned during the teaching the idea of imitation, right? That, you know, I didn't mention this, but Paul said, imitate me as I imitate Yeshua. Yeshua says, you know, he imitates the Father. We talk about this imitation thing, like, you know, we do what they do. Well, you know, we don't see the Creator keeping feasts. We don't see the Creator eating anything. We see the Creator doing one thing, keeping the Sabbath, like resting on the seventh day. So that should help us understand, and probably in whatever level without being conscious of that reason. I think that's one of the reasons why it's always been scripturally and in the Jewish culture the highest command. It's the one that he actually did. Okay? He doesn't eat clean or unclean animals. He doesn't do any. I mean, but he rested on the seventh day or ceased from all of his creative efforts, right? And so that's very powerful imagery for us. And it should be that, and this is where we get into these arguments with people that are not Torah observant, is that they'll say, oh, well, you know, we can rest any day. But he didn't. He rested the seventh day. And I love people say, well, we can keep the Sabbath on any day. And my first question is I call their bluff and say, okay, which day do you do? Because they don't. They're just being wise guys. So that's my first question is, okay, well, which day do you do that on? And if they say Sunday, I say no, because do you keep the whole day? So you don't even do what, you know, so don't throw that in my face. Well, you know, we can keep any day. But you don't. You don't. Okay, he rested. We should imitate him. He rested on the seventh day. We should imitate him. Well, how do we know what the seventh day is? That's an easy question, by the way. Calendars have changed. So don't even give me any calendar argument, okay? It's not about what dates are on a calendar. The Jews, 2,000 years ago, with Messiah walking on this planet, were keeping Sabbath, and he kept it with them. We have verses that say that. So I'm going to guess, and I think it's a very reasonable guess, that they were doing it right, at least on the right day. Because he never corrects them, okay? And so unless anybody can show me they switched it in the last 2,000 years, we know they got it right. It's very simple. Because I love when people want to get all about the Sabbath, they want to do something to do with the calendar. They like to even get to like chapter 1 of Genesis and talk about lunar this and that. Listen, the Jews and Messiah together kept the Sabbath 2,000 years ago. You don't need to go back 6,000 years. 2,000 years ago. So unless you can show me where the Jews moved the day, I can show you where the Catholics moved the day. I mean, there's documentation. They tell you they moved the day. Okay? Now, I know that it wasn't always called Saturday or this, the calendars, they kept the seventh day, whatever that way of understanding was. They had not lost that understanding. And Yeshua certainly endorsed that they had it right. He corrected them about lots of things. That wasn't one of them. Okay? As a matter of fact, he really doesn't correct them at all about Torah observance. He gave them a little bit of grief about their elevation of tradition above things, but he didn't ever say, by the way, you're keeping the feast wrong, you're keeping the Sabbath wrong, you're keeping whatever wrong. He said, some of these things you're keeping without understanding the fullness of the intention. I mean, some of you are walking around going, man, I'm going to lust after that person. I know I'm married, but I'm not going to, I didn't touch her though, but oh, I'm just going to think about her and fantasize about her. He said, that's already cheating. That's already breaking the command, right? So he brought a different level to it, but he never said you're doing it wrong. There's not one commandment in here where he says you're doing it wrong. Okay, so we know that they were at least keeping the commandments correctly. Maybe not in the fullness of how he intended it, maybe without polluting it to some degree with the extra layers of tradition on top of it, but he doesn't correct them like you're on the wrong day or you're eating things you shouldn't eat or whatever, right? And no, he didn't then make everything so you could eat anything. That never happened, okay? People want to point at Mark chapter 7. Mark chapter 7, they were eating bread, so please let's not talk about it as if they were eating pork or something, okay? He was trying to make a point about hypocrisy, not about kashrut, okay? Now, go listen to the teaching I did called Kashrut in Context. I think it's on audio only. It's an old teaching, etc. Maybe I need to do a new one of those. But anyway, so, you know, just keep that in mind that when it comes to these things, that first observance, as Brianna brought out, that is, it's important that he kept that Torah command. And because he rested, he made it into a Torah command for us. I said, do what I did. Okay? All right, Craig?
I was sitting in my house and I was talking to my wife a while back and I was looking at the map. I like geography and I like history. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, parts of different Asia, they have Taoism, Hinduism, southern is Buddhism, and then of course South America's Catholicism, United States is Christianism. And I'm thinking to myself, when the flood came, the pre-diluvian period, there was only 8 people that survived. And I don't know what the population of the world was. And I'm trying to get to where you're at. I'm not
right.
going on an often left field. Then we know about Sodom and Gomorrah. I believe there was only 4. One kind of turned into a salt because it didn't listen. So we have a large population of 2 cities. Now I'm looking at this going, well, as by our teachings here, which I've accepted, Christians don't make it because they're relying on the wrong thing. They're not believing in Torah.
That's not what I said, though. Be careful with that.
Okay, help me then.
Okay, you got to listen to the teaching on the millennium and the kingdom, okay? Okay. All you Christians out there, you're potentially fine if you make, when he pops your bubble and you make your choices. I just understand that everybody, this is important now, I think everybody gets one chance. However, we need to define what a chance is. A chance is an opportunity to prove, be worthy, etc., with the bubble popped. If the bubble's not popped, it's not really a chance. This is important. We have verses, and this is in that teaching. There are verses that say that it is Elohim's desire that if possible, all men be saved. So there should be a process where that is possible. Not going to happen, we know that, but it's possible. Which means that everybody gets a chance. But then we have to define what that looks like. If you were living in some country, never heard of Torah, never heard of Messiah, is that considered a chance? I wouldn't think so, okay? If you were raised your whole life in one of these systems you just named and you never had an understanding of how covenant actually works, then you haven't had a chance. The people who are considered having their chances when they understand, like he's popped the bubble and they realize he's real, this is real, his expectations are real in terms of what covenant looks like. And now you make a choice, as James is talking about, to do something with that or not. Some people are not going to have that chance until the millennium. Many, many people died never having had that chance. I'm not talking about second chance theology here. Go listen to the teaching, all right? But understand that Scripture talks about a first resurrection. You know what that means? There has to at least be a second one. Because why would you call it the first unless there's more than one? It'd just be the resurrection, okay? And so there has to be a second one. It also talks about a second death. Well, you can't have 2 deaths without 2 lives. It's kind of the way it works. You can't take somebody who's alive, kill them, and then kill them again. All right? They have to actually live again and then die. So some people are going to have their bubbles popped and have their chance in the second life. And that's not necessarily an advantage. Don't think, oh, well, it's not fair or this or that. They're still going to have death at the end of that journey or eternal life based on what they do with the revelation they get with their bubbles popped. Does that make sense to everyone? But listen to the Millennium and Kingdom teaching where I explain all of this from verses, every verse laid out, so that you can understand. So no, I don't think anybody who doesn't have a bubble popped situation is even at risk, okay? Now, there may be some really incorrigible people that are just awful and he's not going to let in just because they're just whatever. But I'm talking about the average. Most Christians I know, most even worldly people I know, are really pretty nice people. They're not terrible people. I think that, you know, once they understand that there's a reality that they didn't know before, they'll make the adjustment, okay? You know, all of you know people that nobody's ever said a nasty word about because they're just wonderful people that have always been nice to everybody. And they're probably the perfect person you'd like to see in the forever, but they just have never had that bubble pop moment where they know there's something expected of them beyond just being nice to everybody. Okay?
So does that mean that there's going to be a very small remnant, just like I said about the flood?
The first resurrection will have a small remnant. That's what he talks about, the first resurrection. Those in the first resurrection, it will be a small remnant.
And then we're waiting for the second one.
And so during the millennium, we're going to have about 2 billion people still alive because a third of the planet makes it through the tribulation. That's scripture says a third die, and then a third die, and one third's left, right? So you have dying of the sword, dying of famine and pestilence, and then the third that's still there. But then you have those that are resurrected, that meet him in the sky, that then rule and reign with him. That is going to be a small remnant. It could be as small as 144,000, like Revelation is trying to, you know, points out this 144,000, which is a very small number for 2 billion people alive, plus all the billions that ever lived.
Yeah, because you're looking over trillions if you want to bring think about everybody that's going to come back from Genesis to now.
Maybe not trillions because there were times when the world wasn't that well populated, but it'll be a lot of people. Because even if you consider of the, you know, two-thirds, you know, which would be another, say, 4 billion people, you know, because right now we got about 6-7 billion people, so about 2 billion to be around if it was now. You're still talking about another, you know, 4-5 billion people who will have an opportunity that will be resurrected again into the 1,000 years. What's the point of 1,000 years anyway? It's a chance for these people to have their bubbles popped and to walk this out, and then they get Hasatan released at the end so they can be tested, okay? Because his job is to help see what's going on inside, where, you know, what the reality is of your desires and your lusts and whatever it is you haven't dealt with. He's going to force that out there. And so, and all of that's explained in the teaching. So it's a good teaching for you to, like, listen to in regard to that question. All right. I hope I didn't confuse anybody who was confused at issue with anything I just said. Please listen to the teaching first, and then if you still have issue, contact us. Because after all, it was a 3-part teaching, it was in depth, and I just gave you like a synopsis in 3 minutes. So it's not really, you know, sufficient to that task. All right, Marlene.
So I had a question regarding what you were talking about, the desires and being. What the verses were saying about being enticed by your own desires and led away.
Yeah.
So my question is about, like, if a person, and you even mentioned, like, when you knew that Robinson was the one, when you had that feeling or that whatever you had, you know. So I'm just wondering, what is the difference in the desire? Because that desire is an appropriate desire about getting married and finding the one and all that, you know. How do you know the difference between the desire?
Okay, so it's a good question. Look, there's got to be a balance between if something's purely just an emotion or if there's a thought process to back up the reasoning of the emotion, okay? Well, I just love her. Why? I don't know, I just love her. That's emotion, okay? There has to be more reasoning to it. The emotion's still valid, but can you back it up with reasons, you know? Which is really funny, because I know Revison doesn't like me to talk about her, but, you know, she was so adorable when I would say to her, when we first got married, I would tell her that I loved her, and she would say, how come? Which she was asking for the reasons. You know, well, why, you know? And you should have reasons to back up the emotion, okay? And that's the missing piece. If you don't have good, you don't have any good reasons, then it's just an emotion. And if the reasons are more like cute, pretty, hot, something like that, that's still just emotion. It's not a reason, okay? Because that's still, again, a lust or a desire that's still an emotion. You looked at them, you found them appealing. Well, look, you can look at a lot of people and think they're appealing, but why would you want to spend your life with this one, okay? Because I can promise you, all of you have found multiple people in your life appealing physically, but you didn't necessarily want to marry them. Why? Because there were parts up here that you recognized. Yeah, well, that person looks good, but I don't want to, you know. I remember quite a few ladies, when I was especially in my, you know, 19, 20, 20, whatever years old, I would think, man, that girl's pretty. And I go up and talk to her and realize very quickly, that's not the one for me. Not because there's anything terrible about her. We just, you know, one of these. We just didn't meet up on anything, whatever, right? And so, like, for example, I'll give you an example I think may be helpful to all of you. If you think you are desiring someone and it's challenging to make conversation, that's probably not the right one. If you somehow naturally just converse and naturally just kind of synchronize with each other, that's a positive. It doesn't mean anything in itself, but it's a positive towards that. I mean, that was one of my criteria. Because I dated very little and very short. And like, if I would figure out very quickly, because I was looking to get married, not just to be social, okay? And so if there was a struggle in conversation, if there was awkwardness in just being together, it didn't seem like it naturally fit, I didn't continue, okay? So I only dated a few times, and it was very short if it wasn't the one. But when my wife and I met, we almost acted like we were married from the minute we met. We just sort of felt like in sync with each other. I don't mean like we did anything like married, but I mean, like in public, we would go to a restaurant with some people, and then somehow we just acted like we'd always been together. Like there was just this comfort, natural flow, okay? That's more than an emotion. We would just naturally sort of synchronize as if somehow we were always had been together. We just met. Instead of that excited awkwardness that you get. And of course, we were older, so we didn't quite have that, you know. Neither one of us was like, oh my gosh, when we met each other. Just because we were older and we were beyond the just reacting to that first, right? Because, I mean, obviously, we each found each other attractive, but that level of immature, just emotion base wasn't there. Because we both knew we were looking for more than just that. Of course, we wouldn't be looking for more than that unless the first thing was there, which is, I'm attracted. I mean, that's just a reality, right? We start off with being attracted, okay? But we're attracted to looks first. Then we gotta see, but do we have anything more than that? Because when you start talking to the person, you'd be very, very quickly unattracted. And not because they're terrible, you're just like, oh man, we are just not on the same page. We have nothing in common, whatever it is, you know? And that was part of our vetting process. Look, my wife and I both kind of laid out a lot of things because we were older, in our 30s, and you know, she even took out her CD collection of music and wanted just to see my reaction to her songs and the music she liked, just looking to see what common ground we had or not, you know? And asked me for, you know, what do I like, what do I enjoy? And we asked about movies and other entertainment that we like to do and food, and just because you're gonna live with somebody. Are we going to be living in any kind of level of agreement on the things that we're going to do together? And how hard is it to have conversation? How hard is it to interact? I mean, all of us, if you've done any dating at all, know what it's like to go out on that first date with someone and it just seems like brutal to try to come up with something to say because it's just not natural. And then you meet the right one and it flows like without any effort at all. You just naturally just flow. And it's different. Okay? And by the right one doesn't mean there aren't other problems, but at least they have that level of it, you know? Because if you're having to work at it in the dating process, you're probably going to have to work at it always. Okay? There should be something that connects the two of you that makes things flow relatively easily. Okay? It shouldn't take a big effort. The effort comes later when you're trying to make sure that those little things that don't flow right don't irritate you so much and you can adjust to each other, okay? But the basic stuff should just flow fairly easily. All right, so hopefully that answered that question. Okay, I just want to go back to the Millennium and Kingdom question real quickly before we go to the live stream. Look, this has to be really clear. I have never and will never say that anybody's not getting in. Okay, we have never said this group or that group or whatever is not getting in. As a matter of fact, wheat and tares are in the room right now. Some of you aren't getting in. I don't know which ones, and I'm not going to try to figure it out. I'd be wrong anyway about most of them probably because I don't know you. He knows you. But we don't teach that anybody's not getting in. I don't know whose bubbles are popped. I don't know what you've done with what he's revealed to you. I don't know what his criteria ultimately, what his threshold is for what he's looking for. I just know that some will and some won't get in based on your individual relationships with him, what you do in that relationship, how you respond to that relationship. And that is not something any of us should be, you know, feel that we're qualified to jump into. Okay? So I don't have any concern that most Christians are going to be in. They're just not going to be Christians when it happens. Okay? They will have figured out what they need to do. Same thing with Buddhists and Hindus and everybody else from all the other religions in the world. When he reveals, I think most people will go with what's revealed when they understand who they're dealing with and the truth is the truth and that they've been lied to. So I'm not going to write off anybody, okay? I mean, you know, major psychosociopaths are out there just, you know, raping and pillaging and murdering. Well, they're probably not going to be there, okay? I would guess. I don't know why they're that way. But, you know, your average person who just happened to be raised in a different place, like you were raised, most of you were raised in this world, like a Judeo-Christian world, so this was your source. What if you were raised someplace where nobody has this? They're all using whatever religion they're using, right? And so that's all you know. Can you fault them for staying in it? Can you fault them for being a little resistant to whatever you throw at them if they don't understand a word of what you're talking about? That has to be revealed from above. Father and the Son teaching. Go back to the beginning of that teaching. None comes as the Father draws. He has to draw you to this. And then he has to reveal it to you. And then the Son reveals back to the Father. Okay? So these things cannot be sidestepped. They are the reality for everybody. I just think that everybody will at some point be given the opportunity where they see it and have to make the choice. Okay? Now we see already from Scripture that a lot of people saw and made the wrong choice. Look at all those people, 603,000. You know, the men that came out of Egypt that made the wrong choice. Are they all doomed? No, he might have just decided what he wanted to do just as a punishment and he'll deal with them at another point. But there's ones like Korach that I think had done just because he knew what was going on and he made a choice. Rebelling and rejecting him is a bad, bad choice. Okay? All right? But please, because it's going to get out there all over the internet, I have never said that Christians don't get in. I never said the Hindus, Buddhists, anything. No, I haven't said anybody doesn't get in. I said that when he reveals himself to you, you need to do what he's revealed to you because that's what matters, okay? And I do believe that everybody gets one, which is why it says judgment is now on what? What does it say in Scripture? On the house of Elohim, on those now, okay? So you should be worried. If you understood everything I taught today, if you understand Torah and covenant, then you should be concerned about your future because you own that choice now. You don't get two. This is your one. Don't mess it up. That's why I teach as strong as I do. I want you to understand this is, and it just says, blessed are those in the first, because this is probably the hardest time to do it. In this world, in the millennium world with Yeshua on the throne, it'll be tough, won't be as tough as this, because he'll be sitting on the throne and we'll be helping people. They're still gonna be dealing with their flesh, because even with Yahweh destroying Egypt, people still rebelled against him in the desert over and over again. So he's still dealing with flesh, but I still think it's a lot easier. It was a lot easier for them in some ways than it is for us, because they had that experience right there. We're in the hardest time there is, meaning Yeshua's already been resurrected. We're all scattered where we're scattered. We're still in this fleshly world. This is the hardest time. That's why he says there's an extra blessing for those who qualify for the first resurrection. Okay? Does that make sense? All right. That's why I'm so strong with you guys. I want you to hear those words in that first resurrection. Okay? All right. Shamish Rob.
Okay. Just to follow up on that, what you're saying, Rabbi, we see all these questions here, and I hear people up there. I think, is this that swimming upstream, things they brought up in? Because you're saying that he has to reveal it. But a lot of people, you say you get the one chance or you don't reject. People feel that they have to let their family and friends know about this.
No.
But then they get mad or they get, I guess they get emotional is that they reject it and now they're afraid that they're not going to make it at all, you know?
Yeah, so no, this is exactly what I'm trying to get you to stop doing, right? I'm trying to get people to stop worrying about that. The chance, whatever we call that one chance, is his choice revealing to that person, okay? I would guess that almost none of you started seeking all of this because some friend, you know, tried to convince you about the Sabbath. Something just started to disturb your peace. Something just, it came from outside. It didn't come from a person or a family member beating on you with, don't you see, it's right here, okay? He poked you, and for whatever reason, all of a sudden, you thought something was missing or something was wrong. I described that in the Journey video, right? CC 101, the Covenant Community 101, that first video that's called The Journey. Everybody has the same journey. And so I know you all want to, because it's a Christian thought, save all your friends, save all your family members. It's not your job and you can't do it anyway. So stop. But what about, that's between him and them, and if you know him, you trust that that's not something to worry about. So don't be afraid or worry about it. The chances are that everybody you're worried about will be fine. There'll be a path and a journey they'll have to go through, but you probably have mostly good people you're worried about, and those people will make right choices when they have it revealed to them to make right choices. So I'm not worried about all that, and you should not either. What was that? I ain't worried. I ain't worried. It's Elder's song, right? So don't worry about these things. So, and don't think, oh, I screwed the whole thing up. I should have left my family alone. You didn't mess anything up, okay? All right, you didn't mess anything up. It's between him and them, not between you and them. Your future, by the way, is not between you and them. It's between you and him. So you don't have to argue with your family members who try to pick on you for your choices. Just leave them alone and tell them to leave you alone. This is between you and him. By the way, that's what Paul was trying to say in Philippians 2:12. Everybody's got to walk out their own deal. They got to walk out their own salvation. Okay? And so that means that you were not responsible for them. But you came at, how do I explain this? You came at this still as a Christian, to some degree. In other words, thinking you needed to get out there. Every so many months, I run into somebody, we just ran into somebody this week, who is driving around the country, evangelizing, even though they claim to be messianic, and they believe in Messiah, and they believe in Torah, but they're still doing it like a Christian would. Okay? And they don't get it. This isn't about whatever Christianity turned, you know, Matthew 28 into. Okay? Because Matthew 28 was, by the way, not to go out to the Gentiles and just go ahead and, you know, convince everybody of anything. Matthew 28 was these people that were trained by Messiah was sent to go find scattered Israelites to say, hey, the thing you've been waiting for has started. What was prophesied has begun. Okay? And by the way, the last verse in this teaching is going to be the verse that deals with the idea of preaching the good news of the good. Okay? That actually is the last verse we're going to use, I believe, in my notes. Okay? I don't have it with me. But that's how we conclude, you know, the teaching on the section called good of the good and trustworthy servant. Okay? Because then that verse will make sense. You know, what is the good news of the good? Oh, we just covered it for all these parts. Okay? And when they went to a town, they were looking for anybody with a bubble pop to come find them. And they stand out on a box in the middle of the square, whatever they would do, and they would start preaching a little bit. And some would come by and some would throw rocks at them and think they were stupid and crazy or whatever, heretics, whatever they wanted to call them. Some would go, that's what I've been looking for. I knew there was something, right? Look, so many of you sit here, but realize you can fill this room with a lot of other people. And they wouldn't sit here like you're doing, where he gives me something, and I say it to you, and you go, oh, because it just lights up everything that makes sense. Others will sit here and have none of that experience. because it has to do with the relationship and the bubble popping that you were given. I mean, I could fill this room with Christians and they wouldn't get anyone. They argue with what I say. They wouldn't get it. It wouldn't make any sense. But for you, it all lines up perfectly straight. You're like, oh. I have that same reaction, by the way, because a lot of it's stuff he's giving me while I'm saying it. So I'm sitting there going, whoa. That's so cool how that now makes more sense. And that explains that verse that's always been confused, by everybody. But not everybody's going to receive it that way because they're not ready. Okay? And he has to make you ready. He knows when your moment is ready, when you're ready to finally get it. By the way, usually that's sort of face down in the mud, life sucks, and you're pretty much done. And that's where you're like, oh, I'm either God, just kill me or show me who you are and get me out of this mess. Okay? And then he does. All right? But just you need to understand, this is, you can't do this in a Christian way. I mean, in terms of their practices and methodology, okay? Because that's not scriptural. See, Christianity operates completely out of fear and power, control. And the fear that they want to operate under is, if you don't do enough, all these people are going to hell. Which is stupid. Like, God's going to depend that a whole plan is going to get screwed up by you. Well, then it's doomed already. If he's depending on us, I'm not even disappointing anyone. I mean, like, I'm including my, if it's depending on us, this thing is never going to work. Okay? It depends on him. Now, we're not apostles going into a town and just preaching. So we have YouTube. We have social media. We put things out there that Abba can sort of lead them to and kind of have them click on something. And then next thing you know, they find us on a sidebar or whatever it is. And then all of a sudden they're like, that's what I've been looking for. So it's not that everybody that an apostle walked into a town with that didn't get it was doomed. They just weren't bubble popped yet. They weren't ready. They weren't looking, asking, seeking, knocking. You have to truly embrace the beginning of the Father and Son teaching and the journey teaching to understand this cannot be sidetracked, derailed, or undone. There's only one way this works. He touches you. Okay? He, not me, not anybody in this room. He has to do it. Then he will lead you to where you get the answers, which may be here. Okay? But you're not here because I did anything to bring you here. You're here because he brought you to this. You found this and then you came here. I didn't come to your house and make you watch this. And you probably didn't have anybody else in your life make you watch this, but you found it. But you found it at a point when you were looking. You might not even have known what you were looking for. You were just looking because you're like, there's got to be something. There's got to be more. There's got to be this confusion has to have answers. All right, I tell you, the journey starts the same. Something's missing, something's wrong. You're sitting in church maybe, and you're listening to the pastor, and you're looking at your book, and you're listening to the pastor, and you're looking at your book, and you're going, that doesn't match. And even though you've done that for years and years and years, all of a sudden now something changed where you now see it doesn't match. But what about this verse? That question never came to your head before. Well, all of a sudden now that's happening. That's him going bink and popping a hole in your whole world and just sending you into all kinds of a tailspin. Okay? And then finally you'll stop spinning and you get righted and you start driving in the right direction. That's what we're talking about, okay? And you have nothing to do with the next person getting it or not. You're only responsible for you. However, you can be an example that if he does push a button on somebody, they can say, wait, I know so-and-so over there does certain things, and they meet on Saturday, and I might need to ask them a question because I know that they're doing something a little different. So you have to live this. That's your job. And be a point of light someone may be drawn to ask a question. Then you should point them to the teacher. That's the job. Always point up. Go up, pass you up to the teacher, pass you up to the elder, the elder will pass you up to me. I mean, just push people up the line. When they come to you and ask, they don't come to you and ask, leave them alone. I think we have an in focus called leave them alone, okay? Because I know a lot of people really don't like that we don't push any kind of evangelism. I don't see that's the way the scripture is laid out. None comes unless the Father draws. Doesn't mean none comes unless I go out there and, you know, pester them. Okay? It's not what it says. Okay? And none of you are here because somebody evangelized you. You're just not. You're here because he personally went and touched you and messed you all up. Actually, what he did was he let you see how messed up you already were. Okay? He didn't mess you up. It just felt that way because all of a sudden now you could see how messed up you were. Okay? And then you got all excited and frustrated at the same time because now you didn't know what to do. Well, now that you messed me up, thank you very much. Now what do I do? Okay? And then you get excited when you find what looks like maybe some answers. And then you have to test it and prove it and see if you are getting answers. Okay? And some of you found some ministries on the way to finding this that were some answers and maybe not some answers, right? And then you kept looking and kept looking. Okay? Mercy. Something I just said inspired you.
Yes.
Jumped out of your chair and came
up here. I did jump out of my chair.
Okay.
Because I want to know what that looks like. Because when I think about myself, I know when the Father first got my attention, I was living my life how I wanted to. And I was 23. And I just went to some Christian church. Didn't know the people.
My start was at 23.
I think that's a normal thing. So, well, I didn't know.
If you come from one of the top three schools.
You love going
I included
there.
You. I said
that's
top three.
That's true, you did. That's true. Yeah, one of the top three.
Yeah,
got it. In the country. Okay. So that ain't so bad. That ain't so bad. So I was at some Christian church, and I was there for the wrong reasons. I wasn't there for the reasons that most people do, and or most people would go to church. And I remember the pastor was preaching, and I remember he stopped in the middle of his sermon, and he said, you know, there's some people here who need to move up higher. You need to stop playing games, blah, 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 blah. So me, in my arrogance, I said in my mind, all right, God, if you're real and you want me so bad, then you need to call me out. But you need to call me out by name. So this man who didn't know me said mercy. So I'm thinking, okay, that's an occupational hazard because my name is Mercy and I'm in a church. So that's probably just going to happen. But he looked in my direction and he was like, Mercy, it's time for you to stop playing and move up higher. And I was like, okay, so could that have been him telling me that he's real?
Could be anything.
Because I don't know how that works because I've had certain things happen in the church that I think at some point led me, because I'm sure he can reach you anywhere you are.
Yes, that's the point. Look, the point is each of us has our own individual journey. And for some of us, if we look at it right, we can see how some of the things that we did, however that journey, look, the church I went through, the only church I was ever in was a Torah-keeping church, served a purpose in the beginnings of my journey to understand Torah in the context of Messiah. And then at a certain point, it was no longer continuing me on that journey. Now, the way he worked it out is the whole church sort of imploded and split up and everything else. But the thing is, I was already at the point where I was getting nothing from it, mm-hmm. right? For some of you, your lives are so screwed up, whatever it was, or you just needed to begin your journey, so you ended up in some mainstream church. And it did give you something, mm-hmm. because there is truth in those churches. There is some of it in there. Okay? But there's also enough not that'll keep you where you don't need to be, right? There's enough error that doesn't allow you to really get where you need to be. And so each of your journeys is your journey. The problem is there's times where he may have been trying to move you and you just didn't because you weren't ready to move, you personally, not because you weren't actually qualified to move like you were, but you just didn't want to move yet. You weren't ready to make that leap. Emotionally, whatever it was, yourself. Even though he knew you were ready because he's trying to get you to move, but you didn't. And so could this be him getting some things to your attention? He could do anything, cause or allow, those little things to let you know. And we say this during the prayer time when I'm doing it anyway, where I say, look, Father, we want to thank you for those things, small and great, that you do on a regular basis that remind us that you're aware of what we're going through and that you care. So it certainly could be. Now, if you interpreted that as endorsement to be where you were and to stay there forever, that might have been a problem. But if you were trying to see the question of, are you real? You need to call me out by name. And he did. And it confirmed he's real. That could have certainly been him, because that was something you needed at that moment. Okay? I'm very cautious of using signs and wonders, you know, just in any, you know, willy-nilly in any which way, because signs and wonders are meant to strengthen belief. So if it strengthened, Mercy, your belief that he's real, beautiful. If it strengthened your belief that that church was where you were supposed to be, not so good. Okay? No, staying there a while, fine. But I'm saying, but if you had somehow been convinced that this was the one, right, true, whatever, it somehow would endorse that. Now, by the way, if you've been Worldwide Church of God or Adventist or certain churches, I mean, the way they teach is this is the one true church. Everybody else is pretty much doomed, so you can't ever leave. This is the one true church, okay? Anybody been in one of those? All right. And so anything that might happen to endorse that could make it worse in terms of you ever being able to leave, okay? But if you got what you needed at that moment and then you were able to get whatever next thing he was wanting to do with you, however far down the road, at least now you got that piece that you needed, which was you needed to know that he was real. Okay, look, my first prayer at 23 was because I saw all these religious people around me. I was in, 23 years old. I had a lot of college friends. They were either born-again Christians or they were Orthodox Jews or whatever. They were religious. And I hadn't been raised as a secular Jew. I had, I was bar mitzvahed or whatever, but we really didn't keep anything. I wasn't really raised with any belief about anything. And I prayed, and basically, like you just said, look, if you're real, you're going to have to show me. Okay? And if you are real and you have expectations, well, the two major groups I interact with don't seem to agree. I mean, born-again Christians and Orthodox Jews are not on the same page. Okay? And quite frankly, at that point, I didn't know anything about denominations. I had no idea what kind of Christians most of them were. Some of them I do know they called themselves born-again, whatever that was at the time. And I knew I had all these Jewish friends. Okay? Because I was born into a Jewish community. I just wasn't a part of the part that may have been observant, which was most of them, by the way, were not observant in any, serious way, okay? It was cultural more than anything else. So, but then he led me or caused or allowed me to run into a broadcast on TV by the head of that particular church who was teaching about the one subject that would have made a difference to me, which was the Sabbath. And the only reason it made a difference to me, because in my pride, ego, and cockiness, who was doing nothing, I was a useless 23-year-old as far as the vertical was, he was like, well, only the Jews, I'm like, oh yeah, the Jews, I'm like, I wasn't keeping anything, but he's like, pumping up the Jews or keeping it right and whatever, the Christians doing it wrong, whatever it was that he was saying. And he could have been yelling about anything else and I might not have gotten as interested. But somehow what he was doing and what I was looking for got my curiosity. Because I had made that prayer prior to this happening. And again, the timing, caused or allowed, seems to work beautifully. Just like you being called out happened after you prayed. It didn't happen before. So that's where we can just look at things and say, okay, maybe that was his hand in there. All right? Maybe that was his hand in there. Look, my wife and I together with this ministry have done some really incredible things. And the congruence of her natural inclination towards the youth program was something she just took and developed on her own from the beginning when we didn't have our own children. ABBA had to let me watch an infomercial in New York City that was for trading commodities that then the brokerage firm for that firm was in Tampa, Florida. Then I decided for whatever reason that I wanted to, and I ended up in Florida working for them. And then inspired me to then seek out Vertical again. So I looked for a church connected to whatever I knew, which was a split off of Worldwide. And that's where I met my wife. But he had to do all these other maneuverings, cause or allowed, then I end up there to meet her. Okay? Otherwise, we would never have met. Okay, it wasn't like she was in the local place where I lived and I met her at work or job, this, whatever it was. I had to move to Florida from New York City And I was only planning to be there for a few months, learn the software that they use in the firm, and then buy the software for myself and trade for myself at home in New York. I wasn't planning to stay, you know? And so I moved there in 96, and I got married in 98 because I didn't leave, and then I met her. He causes and allows, all right? But a lot of what we do here comes out of the fruit of those little connections that brought us together, okay? And so, you know, when you look at things, a lot of the 20/20 hindsight gives you the better view, right? You have to zoom out and look and see, oh, you can see the little hand kind of nudging and guiding, you know, every now and then. If you're seeing it in the moment, you're probably not really, you shouldn't be confident you understand it. You got to look later and look with more hindsight so you can know. Because I've had people tell me, oh, Abba did this and Abba did that, and it turned out later, no. Okay? I mean, this lady told the story about how she met her husband and he was for her and all these things. And 2 years later, they were divorced and all that stuff. So I was like, you know, let's be slower to look back and come to a conclusion. So Mercy, looking at it now, I think that's not a problem. That could be something. We go, okay, that's what you needed at that moment. And it led to where you ended up, right? Okay. Because all of you have your own path. Some of you went through one church and then found this. Some of you went through 15 different denominations and tried them, then you ended up here. Some of you, when you left the denominations, were out on your own for a period of time. Others, not so long. Some of you went through other messianic ministries. And then everybody's got their own journey. You don't all have the same journey, okay? That's your journey. And so if I was to go out there and try to evangelize, how do I know what you need and what's the right thing to do at that moment? It's not one size fits all. Believe me, he'll draw you to what you need when you need it. Okay, nobody sparked me to make that prayer at 23. Something poked me to make me curious about, I wonder if there is a God and I'm not doing what he wants. And because I have these friends, right? It was just a thought that was birthed in my head from him probably, okay? It wasn't because somebody came up to me and said, what's wrong with you? Why aren't you doing what we're doing? None of my Jewish friends bothered me about being Jewish. None of my Christian friends even tried to evangelize me to be Christian. I didn't have any of that. He did that, right? And then I kind of ended up in nothing after the church had split in the 90s. And then while I'm living my life in Florida, he got me to realize my life was missing something and caused me to seek him out again. And so naturally, you start with, you know. Look, when I first started when I was 23 years old, the first thing I looked at was Judaism, because that's what I knew. I didn't start looking for a church. I went to the Jewish rabbi at the college. First, I said, okay, let me go talk to the rabbi at the college. And he's the one who gave me the Sabbath book. Okay? And said, here, this is where you should start. You know? And so I did. But then it wasn't what I was looking for. It was part of it. I knew there was still something missing. And then he led me to see other things. Randomly, I'm sitting watching TV, whatever I'm watching ended, and this guy comes on from this televangelist guy, whatever, and I'm like, I didn't want to even watch it. See, now, bear in mind, if this happened today, modern day, you just quickly flick the channel, whatever, with your remote control or whatever. Not so easy when I was 23. I had to get out of the bed, walk up to the TV, and change the channel. Which, if you were knowing what I'm talking about, you often watch something you didn't want to because you're too lazy to get out of the bed. Yeah, you can clap for that. How many times did you watch some dumb thing because you just, and you sat there the whole time going, I hate this show. But I don't feel like getting out of bed. Because you couldn't change the channel. Okay? All the kids are like, what? And it was black and white. The TV was a black and white TV. And by the way, the remote, this one actually had a remote control. It was on the dresser. So I didn't want to go. And it was one of those remote controls, though, that when you push the button, all it did was scroll through the channels one at a time. You couldn't go to a particular one. Okay? So it would just scroll. And if you missed it, you're like, got to go through the whole cycle again. Because if you were pushing too fast and you'd miss it, right? Then you'd have to go all. Anybody have one of those remote controls? Know what I'm talking about? Oh, my gosh. I'm on 2, trying to get to 11. Oh, I missed it. Oh. It's like when you were dialing on the old phones and the last number you double skipped and you're like, oh, I got to start again. You know, your finger got just a little stuck on that last one because it would be like a 9. And you got to go all the way around and you're like, oh, got to start all over again. All right. So, you know, but this is the thing that we all have to understand is that was my journey, right? And you're laughing, but, you know, I never watched any of that stuff, and it came on. It came on when I was looking, and I was not happy, and I was missing something. And I was really, I really was about to get out of the bed. But, you know, for some reason, this guy started making me laugh. He looked like he was 150 years old, screaming about whatever. And he was making me laugh. I thought he was funny. I didn't know what he was, because he didn't look like, I'm picturing, you know, more like a Catholic thing for a Christian. So this guy's in a suit, he's at a desk, he's yelling, whatever. I didn't know what he was. So I had my curiosity. But the thing is, it was what I needed at the moment. Okay? Not forever, at the moment. That's what you needed, Mercy, at the moment, right? Everybody, you went through whatever you went through, and it was what you needed at the moment, provided you understood that it was just for that moment, you know, as you were continuing on your journey. Okay? Look, they were supposed to go to Sinai, but he said, you've gone around this mountain long enough. They weren't supposed to stay at Sinai. Okay? It was part of the journey. All right? And so hopefully that makes sense for everybody. All right. It's almost 5:30. What else you got over there? Or we didn't even get to you because Mercy came up. Sorry about that. Live streamers are like, oh, he got us again.
Yeah, I think I started that and then I'll take it.
It's Mercy's fault. We're going to blame her.
And then Mercy.
We're asking you to have mercy because we had to have mercy, so.
Okay, Ashley Williams, Rabbi, can we consider the joy in our trials, the endurance during the trials, and the wisdom we ask for to get through the trial as part of the good and perfect gifts given from the Father?
Let me think. I think you can consider the joy. No, you know what? Look, I think this is where we miss some of the points and we still think like Christians. So you want him to do everything. You want everything to come from him. Some of these things just naturally come out of, as a manifestation of the effort of the thing he said to do. He wants you to look at a trial as potential joy because of what it's going to give you as a result. And that doesn't come from him necessarily. But on the other hand, maybe it does because he has to reveal to you what James is talking about so you can understand what's going on. So that part comes from him. And that is a gift for you to understand and be able to perceive a trial as joy. So yes, from that point of view, yes, okay? The endurance is a result of your efforts, okay? The wisdom is something you ask for. That does come from him because you ask for that, okay? So part yes, part no to the way you understood that, all right? Okay, next.
Okay, Shebrew, which this is Mark Oswald. Question, comment, James 1:21 struck me today as closely paralleling the blessing spoken after the reading of the Torah. Would that be an appropriate connection?
Okay, yes, there probably is. Because the blessing after the Torah reading does have something to do with the idea of the implanted word or, you know, who planted the word amongst us, okay? So, yes, I think you can certainly see that connection there, Mark. Okay.
Okay, Greg Wallen, Rabbi, if frustration is not wrath, what if the word, quote unquote, hate comes out sometimes or often when referring to others' treatment of you?
All right. So I didn't say that because, I don't have the dictionary to know what the actual definition of wrath is. But the thing is, anger can take lots of forms. All right. So that's first of all. But then when we're talking about, when we get to that place of hate, we don't have a universal understanding of words that we use. So when you use a word, it may not mean the same thing, or you may not intend it fully the same as I might intend it. So I would ask you, what does that mean to you? Why, you say you hate me. You say you hate something. Because that's a strong word. So what's behind that word? Why do you hate me? I can understand maybe you're disappointed, maybe you're frustrated, maybe you got hurt feelings, but why do you hate? Hate is a different. So I think we just use words sometimes and we don't even think about the meaning. We just get used to using them, okay? You know, I've worked with one person that no matter what kind of level of correction is given, they think they're being scolded. And scolding is sort of a level of correction, right? But there are other levels. Just like anger. Someone say, well, you're angry all the time. Well, no, sometimes I'm frustrated. Sometimes I'm this, sometimes, right? It can be, but we have one word. And that one word doesn't give you all of the variety of flavor that it could be. So you have to ask more questions at that moment. So if someone's telling you that you hate them, or if you're thinking, I hate you, you should be asking the question, that's pretty strong. Why would I use that word? Do I hate you, or do I hate the way I'm feeling right now because of what you just did? Or I hate what you did? Or I mean, what? Why am I using that word, you know? You know, think about that next time you use strong language with anybody. Is it the right word to describe them or the way you feel? I don't have any problem really with strong language, but I think often we just use it because our emotion is running rampant and out of control, and we're not actually thinking about the words we're using. Do they actually express? And then, because all of us have had this experience, we say things we wish we regret, we wish we hadn't said. Anybody ever do that? Everybody, right? So why do we say things we regret? Because our emotions are driving, and we're just actually using the word as a striking weapon. So we're not actually using the word because it's the right word. We're using the word because we know what it's going to do to the other person. It's meant to cause pain emotionally or whatever. It's meant to hurt them. And that's usually when we say things like, I hate you. Okay? All right? Now, and again, I think that the word hate or any of the strong words may be more accurate or less accurate depending on how the volume. In other words, if you look at someone like, you know, I hate you. As opposed to you're just screaming, and I hate you, because then that's just, you don't even know what you're saying at that point. You're just lashing out. So if someone is saying it in a much more calm way, I'd be more concerned because maybe they're actually thinking about their words a little bit. Okay? If it's coming out of a more calm place. So if you're the one saying it, ask yourself the questions, why? Why did I use that word? Is that really how I feel? Why do I feel that way? And if someone's using it towards you, and I do this, by the way, you can ask people in my life, I do this. If you use words, really strong words with me, I'm going to ask you, why do you say that? I mean, I want to make sure I'm understanding it the right way, because I don't want to assume what you meant. Are you just trying to lash out at me? Or do you actually hate me? Or you actually, whatever word you used, you know, whatever. I want to understand. Because then I don't want to respond based on my wrong understanding. Okay? So you can ask yourself, or you can ask the other person, depending on which one's using the words. And if you're both using them, then you should be questioning yourself and them. Okay? Because you're going to make some decisions sometimes based on what somebody said, and you will not be interpreting it right. You're going to make some bad decisions. Because anytime you make decisions based on faulty information, they're not going to be good decisions. Okay? Well, it's not faulty. She said she hated me. He said he hated me. But it's how you thought what that meaning was. If you're wrong about the meaning, then the words didn't help you any. Okay? Well, this person called me this name. Okay. I've been called lots of names. All of you have been called names by people in your life. Did they really think you were that word? Or were they knowing that word would make you go crazy and lose your mind and get upset? Were they pushing a button, in other words? Okay? Because I know, everybody knows, that if they have a relationship long enough, you know words that will push a button. You call them this word or this, and usually we use a letter for it, right? You call them the this word or the that word, and you know, boom, you're going to get your explosion. And it's not necessarily because you really think they are that. Okay, look, I've told this story many times. You know, I've told somebody, I said, look, you know what, I said, man, you're being really annoying right now. And that person could think, oh, I think they're an annoying person. And all I was trying to say is this thing you're doing right now is annoying. But without clarification, the other person could run with, oh, well, you know, why do you want to be with me? You think I'm annoying. I don't think you're annoying. I think you're being annoying. See, that subtlety makes a difference. Okay? All right? I hate you when it really is I hate what you're doing right now and the way you're treating me is not this, but it comes out as I hate you. So you can't just take that because Now, by the way, it may be true. Maybe they do hate you. Ask. Get more clarification. Do you hate me or do you hate what we're going through right now or what I said or what I did or whatever? Which, you know, get more, because otherwise your reaction is going to often be wrong because you're going to guess wrong. And you're only going to escalate it in a big way. Okay? So you have to be careful. Anger then can manifest in words you would regret saying. So be really careful with what you say when you're upset. So I tell you, don't text angry. It's like, you know, Groundhog Day, don't drive angry. Okay? Don't text angry. All right? All right? So, you know, even if you don't have a groundhog in your lap, all right, because, you know, he's functionally filled. All right. So, you know. All right, Rob, anything else real quick? Because I know I went late.
No, nothing related to what we taught today. So.
All right, good. We're okay, good. Live streamers, guess what? In two Sabbaths, you get to ask all the questions you want if you're in zone one. So keep that in mind. And if you're not in zone one, then a week after, actually the same Saturday is zone two, and then the week after that is zone three. So you've got plenty of time to ask your questions. So if ever there's a teaching where I don't get to the live streamers, if you keep your questions, you can always ask them in a zone meeting, okay? Just wait for your zone and have your questions ready. And so we'll cover that. So I know that sometimes you get the short end of the stick, but you know what? I think you could expect that that makes sense. The people here, because they're here, should get a priority, okay? Please no insult to all of you that are not here. Solution, of course, is to just move. Then you get to line up with everybody else here, okay? Anyway, but no, I do love you guys and appreciate you and want you to get your questions answered. So you can either call here or wait for a zone meeting and we can interact and get your questions answered. Okay, that's why we do the things like the zone meetings. All right, that being said, I hope that was a blessing to everyone.